All right, let's call this meeting of the House Health and Social Services to order. It is 3:05 p.m. on March the 11th. Present is Representative Keller, Representative Nagyak, Representative Pruitt, Representative Reinbold, Representative Seaton, and myself, Representative Higgins. And let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. Let's see here. Our House Recording Secretary is Butch Carver. Our LIO moderator is... It's Jess. Blank. What is it?
Jess.
Yep. Is Jess. And our committee aide is Julie Morris. So if anybody in the audience needs any help, raise your hand. Julie will come and see if she can assist you. And we have Representative Tarr with us. She said herself. Does the record reflect that she just joined us? With our electronic devices, let's make sure they're turned off. If they ring while we are talking, you will owe us donuts. And sometimes we need them. So with that said, let us begin. All right. Now, today we have the third hearing of CSHB 301, Autopsies and Death Certificates. May I have a motion to bring CSHB 301 before the committee?
Mr. Chair, I move that we bring HB 301 28 LS 1196 PAPA before the committee for discussion.
Okay, hearing no objections, then CSHB 301 is before the committee for discussion, and I believe we have an amendment.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move amendment number one to House Bill 301, which should be P.1. You should have it all in front of you.
I make them. Oh, go ahead.
Object for purposes of explanation.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Yeah.
This is actually it's conforming to the version as it currently sits on the other side. But if there are questions, I would ask that Ms. Clement from Rep. Heron's office speak to the additional questions. But like I said, it is conforming to the changes that have been made in the Senate Finance Committee to the concurrent or the companion legislation on the other body.
And at this time, we'll have the sponsor come forward. Put your name on the record.
Chairman and members, Representative Bob Heron, House District 37.
Go ahead.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chairman. As you can see in the amendment, it puts it in statutes. The conversations that we had in the first hearing. And while I was on travel status at the second hearing, basically is we would work with the medical examiner to have the adequate technology, the personnel and training so that using telemedicine carts that there could be a remote examination to help out the ME in decision whether to bring in the remains to Anchorage or not. And then, of course, it has to apply to a national standard. And then there was a clarification on the current statute says you had to return it to the where the death occurred, and so it was appropriate to work within the budget that they have, and to transport the remains to the appropriate location rather than the place of death, and that's the amendment, Mr. Chairman.
Are there any questions about the amendment?
I'll remove my objection.
Now you have to make a motion to adopt the amendment, right?
Mr. Chair, actually made the motion, so at this point it would be appropriate for you to indicate that we've adopted the amendment if no one objects.
All right. Any objections? Hearing no objections to the amendment is adopted. And now that we've got the amendment adopted, let's go to our bill. Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, with your help and others, is that we have a document that we can forward to the next committee referral with support from around the state. And I just want, it's not really I found this today, is that Quark out of Nome has been a grief navigator for many years, And it was actually pretty remarkable, the packet that they put together for the residents of the regions in the region that they serve. And it, it basically is it's put in one packet these things that have working with Kerry Shelton that we've actually improved this process. And so I'll just pass it around to the committee that can peruse it. It is quite a package. It's not what we're trying to do, but the nonprofits around the state would be able to use this as a model, so that when the MOU between the department and individual nonprofit is that they could write an MOU based upon this historical data and forms, so that again the MOU revenue neutral would be something that the ME and the nonprofit would be comfortable with in working together.
Are there any questions for the sponsor? No? Well, what is the wishes of the committee?
Mr. Chair, I'll move HB 301 version PAPLA as amended out of committee with individual recommendations and the attached zero fiscal note.
Hearing no objections, the CSHB 301 version P moves out of the House Health and Social Services Committee, and we'll take a brief at ease.
Mr. Chairman, is that moving as amended?
As amended.
I see. Yeah,
thank you.
Didn't,
that's
on
you
there.
Said that, right?
Yep.
Yeah, as amended.
Thank
all
you,
right,
Mr. Chairman.
And we'll take a brief at ease. I have a motion to bring CSHB 214 before the committee.
I move HB, excuse me, 214 version C, LS0869C before committee for discussion.
Hearing no objections, CSHB 214 version C is before the committee for discussion. And we have my chief of staff, Tom Suttler, will come up and will explain to us our updates and the changes.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Thomas Studler. I'm staff for Representative Higgins, and I am here today to give you some of the explanations on the changes that we've done to House Bill 214. As you know, 214 is a mental health patients' rights and grievance bill that is before the committee, and we have made some significant changes to the bill. I have the explanation of changes.
Excuse me, is your mic on? Doesn't sound like it's on. Is it? Okay.
Move it forward, yeah.
Just project it.
Okay.
Got it.
I was going to get facetious, and I thought I better not. So in the explanation of the changes, when we look at the bill, Section 1 is unchanged on the bill. It remains the same. There was a concern because of the appeal process going through administrative hearings that without adding a confidentiality clause, those records could be made public. So Section 2 was added, and it was amended by adding that the office shall maintain confidentiality of records pertaining to the mental health grievance appeal filed under this statute, except as necessary to conduct the appeal among the parties and unless the office has received prior written consent of the person who filed that grievance, so that there is that confidentiality maintained and it's not a matter of public record. Under Section C, that was changed in A5 is amended to include except as provided in 14 of this subsection. If you look at number 5, that allows for a person who is being evaluated or inpatient care to a reasonable opportunity to visitors. There was some concern over 14 that says who has been evaluated or treated in a locked evaluation facility or unit for more than 3 days has the right to a reasonable opportunity. We did not want to have language in there that seemed to contradict one another, so we added that to that paragraph that made it clear that you are allowed a reasonable opportunity to visitors unless you're in that three-day lockdown and the medical doctor would allow that at that point. Another one that was added in there was that we changed is in Section 3, Number 13. It did say had the right to have an advocate that was employed by and clearly identified by an evaluation facility unit or designated treatment facility. The language was changed to allow the individual the right to have a designated representative to act as their advocate and assist in filing a grievance, and that they not have to be employed by that facility. It could be an advocate of their choosing because of the obvious conflict of interest. If you work for a facility and you're supposed to be my advocate, there could be some concern there for a conflict of interest. Number 15 was added, which has the right to confidentiality of a person's records unless that consent has been consented in writing to the release of those records. After that, we move into Section 4, and you'll see that we remove the 24-hour call center with just a telephone call center. That replaces that 24-hour requirement on the department so that it could be operated and maintained during normal operating hours. There's also available to people the 211 number that would allow them to call in to get an advocate or assistance on that. Number 3 was amended by removing an impartial body designated by the department, and it was changed to the Office of Administrative Hearing so that it comports to Section 2 and 1, or Section 2, where it gives the authority to administrative appeals to that department. Number 6 was amended by adding by the Department for Records Review and Maintenance. Before, it just said for the timely records review and maintenance. It didn't say by whom, so there was some confusion as to who was to do that review and maintenance of the records, and that clearly falls to the department. Number 7, we added for the maintenance and confidentiality grievance ratings that the documents and decisions, unless the grievance provides prior consent again, just wanting to make sure that they understand that those records are, in fact, confidential. One of the major changes was in Section 8, which has been added, that it's a process for designating a grievance by categories. So a Category 1 grievance would be those relating to the physical or social environment under the control of the facility or unit. That would be to the ambiance, the milieu of the facility, meals provided or whatever, that would not constitute a violation of someone's rights under the statute, which would be under Category 2, which is a more severe thing where your rights have been violated, or to the worst offense under a Category 3, which is a grievance that actually alleges a criminal act has occurred. So by breaking it down into categories, I believe what we've done is we've separated the wheat from the chaff, so to speak, in that aspect.
And that was a big concern of the facilities, was how, you know, the grievances and how they went forward. Would they have to do all of them? And by separating them, that means they can handle a lot of the challenges within the facility without burdening the administration with them. And this only will burden the administration with, I guess, the worst offenses. So
if we go to the department for review. Again, in Section 7B1, amended by removing patients' records, because it seemed that there was some confusion in the word patient's records, so we changed it from the patient's records of admission or administrative file for the patients, so it would not be confused that this grievance could be possibly placed into their medical records. There was some concern that that could have occurred. Under Section B, 3, that was amended by adding for Category 2 and 3 grievances delivered to the department within 24 hours, and we deleted the other part of Section 4 that talks about for the various other reasons that we would have submitted a grievance to them for sexual assault and all that, because obviously if it's an alleged of a crime, then that would fall under that category and it would be required to be reported within 24 hours. So we deleted that other section as it was duplicative, and we now have that covered by categories. Further, in Section 4 under Paragraph C, we changed that. That would be on page 4. We amended 5 business days to calendar days for a written response to the patient on an electronic copy to the department. That's not the reporting. That's the response to a grievance. We further went on to amend that would allow the commissioner to review that, and we changed it from 5 days to give the patient an opportunity to actually review that and see what recourse was available. So we put in there for 30 day for them to respond back to the department or to the facility. Then former section 4D was deleted in its entirety from the bill. On page 5, we amended the change from a quarterly report by the institution to an annual report, as we felt the quarterly report was a little onerous on the institutions. And this is the only place that you'll see Category 1 grievances mentioned again, along with Category 2s and 3s, and that's for data collection purposes, because that deals with the grievance, the type of grievance, the general resolution to that grievance, and that would be for data collections for the department so that they would have that. We also amended it by adding Categories 1, 2, and 3 and taping out type of grievances, trying to tighten that up. Further, we amended the Section G right below that, changing it from a biannual report to an annual report from the department and changing type to category for the same reporting requirements to the governor and to the legislature and for public record so that they are available to the public on an annual basis. Section 5 remains unchanged, and Section 6 was added, repealing Section Alaska Statute 4730-660B13. Which goes to the department delegating their authorities to private institutions. I'd be glad to answer any questions.
Are there? Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just trying to, on page 4, lines 24, where we have 24 days, or 30 calendar days. So can you explain again, it says the grievant may request a review by the commissioner within 30 calendar days. So do I understand that the grievance has gone to the department, and then when it's at the department without – can you explain
absolutely.
The word?
Through the chair, Representative Seaton, in the original bill, the grievant had 5 days to appeal to the commissioner from a resolution received by the institution. So if the treating facility had attempted to resolve the grievance at its level, and I wasn't happy with that as the grievant, I had 5 days with which to make a decision on whether to escalate it to the commissioner. After that 5 days, my grace period was gone. Under this new version, it allows me 30 days to review that and see whether or not I want to take that forward to the commissioner.
And follow-up? And so the sequence here on line 21, where a written response to the patient and electronic copy of the response to the department within 5 calendar days.
That is through the chair, Representative Seaton, that is the institution reporting to the department on what their resolution was, not the grievance response.
And
okay.
And does that help? It may help us if I give everyone a flow chart, because I know this bill is got a lot of moving parts to it, and if you want, Tom can go through the flow chart fairly quick, and so you can kind of understand how it works.
If you look at if you have this before you, this is the current one, is existing statutes today. Pretty simplistic. Start where the patient has the right to file a grievance, goes to the evaluation facility, where they have a formal grievance procedure inside their hospital or their facility, and then from there it ends with the evaluation facility. And their staff members who's trained to give them that response, and have a nice day. We're through. Under this one, it's a little more in depth. Because now when you file, you have to have an approved form, so we don't have 7 or 8 different kinds of forms out there that could be confusing, or 7 or 8 different policies. This bill calls for them to be uniform as administered by the department. So that standardized notice grievance process that's in there has now been standardized so that we don't have 7 different policies and 7 different, 7 or 8 different procedures for doing a grievance. The grievance is filed. It goes into the complaint by the facilities. They check it daily. They maintain a complete record of all the documents as it moves forward. The facility must respond on Category 2 and 3s within 24 hours to a department. There is no requirement to report a Category 1 to the department until at the end of the year for their data collection purposes. And then they must provide a response to the complainant within 5 calendar days. That must include the description of the appeal process, and the facility must provide an electronic copy of the grievance to Department of Health and Social Services within 24 hours and a response to the grievance. And then you have 5 days for them to give that to the department. Then the patient can now decide whether or not they want to appeal that with the commissioner within 30 days instead of 5 days. And then if that decision does not hold, they have one more recourse, and that's the appeal through the Office of Administrative Appeals, who was a fair and non-binding, it's a fair and impartial board that has no dog in this fight, so to say.
Okay, there you go.
So hopefully that explains the process and how it's cleared it up some.
And Tom, I'm going to tell you, I appreciate all the hard work you've put into this bill.
Thank you, sir.
All the hours me and you have talked about this, and your patience with me.
Well,
good job.
It's a very the emotions run high on both sides. The emotions run high on both sides, and I think that it's somewhere at the end of the day, the reasonable minds I know will bear out on this, and that we will have a good, fair, and impartial process. That an individual who is in a mental health facility, and most certainly in a diminished capacity at that time, has the right to file agreements and is being given the right guidance to file that to make sure that their rights are, in fact, protected.
And so the committee knows we do have, to answer questions, we have the Division of Behavioral Health here, Randall Burns, and then we have Melissa Ring, which is from the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, which I believe are on the line. These are all on the line. And Ron Hale, also with the Alaska Psychiatric Institute, if there's any questions for those people. So just let me know if you have that. We can bring them on. And if there's no questions for Tom, we can go to public testimony.
Thank you, sir.
Okay. Don't go far. We'll probably call you back, Tom.
Yes, sir.
Now, if you've already have commented on this bill, I see, you know, several names here that we've already heard from you a couple of times. So if you don't have anything new, basically, let's keep our comments to just about a minute. We want to give time to the people that have already have not talked with this committee yet on this bill. So. And with that, we'll start off with our first person online, and Faith Myers. I know we've talked with you a couple of times already. Are you there?
Yes.
All right. Do you have something new you'd like to tell the committee? And put your name on the record for us, and if you can keep it to a minute, we would appreciate it.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Faith Myers. The states of Maine and Georgia made extensive improvements to their psychiatric patient grievance procedure laws and rules. Maine now has one of the top ratings of quality of psychiatric patient care. The state of Georgia produced a 14-page patient grievance procedure law. It's a pretty good law. The question is, how do we in Alaska want to be remembered? I support the passage of CS House Bill 214. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Faith? No. Thank you, Faith. We appreciate your testimony. And then we have, is it Doris Collins?
Yes. Mr. Chair, committee members, my name is Doris Collins. The Alaska Psychiatric Patient Grievance Procedure Law, AS 473847. Is a throwback to the methods that were used 100 years ago. In 2010, Disability Law Center stated in a letter, it is a position of Disability Law Center that AS 4730 is inadequate to protect the right of mental health patients to file a meaningful grievance. In 2007, the Alaska Mental Health Board, the Mental Health Trust Authority Board of Directors, and the Anchorage Chapter of the Alaska Alliance of the Mentally Ill wrote a letter calling for the revision of AS 473847. Inadequate to protect the right of mental health patients to file a meaningful grievance. I agree. In closing, I support the passage of House Bill 214. Thank you.
Any questions? Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Don Roberts, Jr. from Kodiak, are you on?
I am, sir.
You have the mic.
Okay, my name is Don Roberts from Kodiak. I support House Bill 214. Talking about emotions running high earlier, well, you know, there's the emotions of the agency people, and basically our emotions are about something interfering with their work. For consumers, you're interfering. Our emotions are about our livelihoods and how we're treated as citizens. And I think whenever you introduce the coercive authority of the state to restrict people's movements, you need to be able to address those. Those are certain rights as citizens and as human beings, and I really don't care how inconvenient it is to these agency people for me to be heard by the state in addressing various concerns. And I think I'm really close to my minute, so I will let it go with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Don? Nope. Thank you, Don, for your testimony. We appreciate your time.
Thank you.
And I think we have, is it Scott Calder from Fairbanks?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, can you hear me?
I can.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. My name is Scott Calder, members of the committee. I have not testified previously, but I did get a chance to look over the CS, and I heard Mr. Stedler's explanation of the changes. I think this is a great idea. Excuse me. I think it's always a good idea to provide external reviews and appeals, especially as the previous speaker indicated, in areas where the coercive power of the state is involved. Any area like that, I think, is good to have external review. I heard and understood what Mr. Stedler said about the changes. The changes seemed appropriate and logical. The only thing I might ask the committee to look at again, if it's not too much trouble, might be on page 4 of the CS. Version C, line 26, subparagraph D, agreement may not file agreements or an appeal later than 1 year after, et cetera. I wonder if that period of time might be better if it were longer, but I suppose there'd be people who would argue against that. Anyway, I support the CSHB 214 version C, and thank you for your time.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Any questions? No. Thank you. In the public audience, we have one person that would like to testify. Is Barbara Hengeman. Okay. Come on. Thanks for your help.
Good afternoon. I'm Barbara Hengeman. I'm the Acting Director of the Division of Behavioral Health. I've also asked Stacey Crailey, Assistant Attorney General, to join me because some of the comments I'm making are reference to current statutes and concerns I have about some changes in the CS. So, all right.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you for your ongoing work on behalf of vulnerable Alaskans, and thank you also for your work on the CS for HB 214. The changes you've made demonstrate your interest in collaboration and continued patient protection. We just received a copy of the version C this morning, but have some preliminary thoughts for the committee's consideration. We'll be working on further analysis and a fiscal note. We'd like to reassert our belief that current statutory protections and agency policies and procedures are adequately affording mental health patients the protections they need. Requirements currently enforced by the state, the feds, accreditation agencies, and treatment providers are serving patients well. You've heard testimony to that effect. On the CS, and this is most significantly, I'd like you to have your attention. Section 6 repeals Alaska Statute 47.30.660B13, and that would eliminate the department's ability to operate designated evaluation treatment and designated evaluation and stabilization facilities. This would eliminate services at Fairbanks Memorial, Bartlett Regional, Peace Health in Ketchikan, and YKHC hospitals. Respectfully, we ask that the repeal of this subsection be reconsidered. In Section 4, on lines 12 and 13, CS references an evaluation facility or unit or designated treatment facility or unit. In the statutory reference, proposed to be deleted in Section 6 that I just mentioned. It appears that this language indicates the applicability of this grievance process, and we maintain that this process is most appropriately directed at a state-operated psychiatric hospital or designated treatment facility or a unit designated by the department under regulations, rather than at community mental health centers whose constituents are served in a voluntary or outpatient program. We also respectfully ask that the multi-tiered grievance approach should be thoroughly deliberated by the committee. Starting first at Category 3 of that approach, criminal acts. The term criminal acts should be further defined. Perhaps the Judiciary Committee could explore the intent of this language, but we'd ask the sponsor to clarify his intent before moving the bill forward. More importantly, though, we submit that alleged crimes involving physical or sexual abuse should immediately engage law enforcement. Neither the treatment entity nor the department has the appropriate resources to deal with alleged criminal acts. It's fine to require the agency to inform the department of these matters, but these cases are not grievances per se. They should be referred to law enforcement for investigation. This is already a requirement for the treatment providers. Also with Category 1, involving grievances involving the designated treatment facility's physical or social environment, that should be clarified as well. It may be that some of the most minor complaints do not need to engage in a formal treatment grievance process, but rather could be handled immediately and informally in-house. The CS also allows a period of 1 year after discharge for a patient to file a grievance. That seems to us an extraordinary length of time, and perhaps the timeline should at least be connected to the incident rather than the discharge. It will be very difficult to investigate a grievance filed 11 months after a patient leaves the hospital. This provision delays justice for the patient and potentially denies it to the hospital and its staff. And the subsequent appeal to the commissioner and hearing at the Office of Administrative Hearings provide additional levels of intervention. But the question is, what could a meaningful remedy be available at that point? If a patient believes their right was denied access to a phone call or wearing of their own clothes or outdoor recreation, those would be the level one. You know, what good will it do for the commissioner or the Office of Administrative Hearings to rule on such matters up to a year after their discharge? If it's urgent elevation of alleged crimes that you're concerned about, those are and should be referred immediately to law enforcement, out of the hands of the provider and the department. For most other matters, the ideal situation is for these matters to be handled informally and immediately within the treatment entity if possible, as is currently the case. And that's all I have.
I do have a question. You said Section 6, AS 47, 30660B, subsection B13,
yes,
as repealed. You said that if we repeal that, then what was your words again? Say it one more time.
That's our authority to have designated evaluation and designated evaluation stabilization programs in other hospitals. That's our authority for that piece, and so it's the belief that, and actually Ms. Crayley could probably speak to that more specifically, but that we would lose our ability to have those services provided in other places other than, so that acute care services that are currently provided closer to home for folks would not be available.
Okay. We've been asked that you please provide testimony to us in writing.
Okay.
If you could do that. But, you know, let's get back to that, because that section basically says delegate upon mutual agreement to another officer or agency of it or political subdivision of the state or a treatment facility designated any of the duties and powers imposed upon it. So, mm-hmm. So basically what we're saying there, if we delete that, that means we're asking you to send those grievances up the chain of command instead of dealing with them in-house, my understanding.
Through the chair, my name is Stacey Crayley. I'm Chief Assistant Attorney General with the Department of Law, and I'll see if I can answer that question.
Okay.
I believe that may have been the intent of the amendment, but that the amendment is much broader than that, and that's the problem, is that the authorization under 660B13 is the statutory authority that the department relies upon in order to enter into contracts with DET or DES facilities. So under the current mental health provider community, we have one state hospital, Alaska Psychiatric Hospital, which is our which the state operates. And as a result of logistical areas, geographical areas, and other things, we've created a system of care, unlike other states where they have psychiatric hospitals in different communities or different locations. What we have done in lieu of that is we've created these DET-DES systems where we then contract with the local provider community hospital, for example, Fairbanks Memorial or Bartlett Regional, and we contract with them to provide the services that should be or would be otherwise provided at API. So, for example, at Bartlett Regional Hospital, they can do a 72-hour commitment. They can evaluate somebody for 72 hours, determine whether or not somebody should be involuntarily committed. And then if they are involuntarily committed, they can stay at that hospital for up to 30 days. Anything after a 30-day commitment, generally those services are provided at API. So you haven't just limited the grievance issue by repealing B13. You've effectively, in our opinion, wiped out that entire system or process, because when we enter into these agreements, this is the statutory authority we rely upon to enter into our DES and DET agreements with these providers. And if we don't have that authority, it would be very unlikely that the department would believe it had the authority to delegate that authority, and other providers would be hesitant to enter into agreements with the department without this statutory authority to provide the services that are required to be provided at API. But because of the way we've set it up, we provide them in local community hospitals. We believe the amendment, the repeal of the amendment, is much broader than what was intended. And if what you want to do is not delegate the grievance process, I think there's a more surgical way to do that as opposed to a complete repeal of that provision.
Okay. And you can get to us your surgical way of doing that.
Sure.
Well, good. I mean, that's what we're here to ask.
Exactly.
And we're here to work with you, too, because we want to make sure this works. Okay. I'm glad that you brought that up.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Keller.
I just want to say on the record that I'm glad that you made this change, because I think it highlights a very interesting subsection of law. But, you know, that's pretty broad delegation authority. Mm-hmm. And I'm going, whoa. You know, I didn't know that you had that broad of authority, and I just want to review it. So, thanks. Yeah.
Any other questions? Representative Tark?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just want to make sure I understand. Could you say the reference one more time?
Through the chair, Representative Dar, it's 4730660B13.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Here you go. And Mr. Chairman?
Representative Seaton?
I'm happy to have this conversation, too, because I think it was about 4 or 5 years ago where we changed the system to allow this authority, because there were people that were having issues down here in Southeastern, and they had to be flown and held at the airport until there would be an airplane to go to API, because there wasn't authority to treat them locally. So I appreciate getting the delegation of authority issue, and I appreciate, you know, coming forward and making sure that we get that appropriately confined. So thank you, Mr. Chair.
And that was our issue when we started looking at it. We were trying to figure out how we could, you know, make this happen surgically. We just couldn't come up with the language. So I'm glad that you can, and you can help us with that.
Mr. Chairman, I'll try. I think we can do it.
Yeah. Good. I appreciate that. Because, you know, our the purpose of the bill is not to hinder facilities. We're here to try to make things better for everybody. So that's the purpose. Any other questions? No? Thank you. We appreciate it. And we have, they just want questions only. So if there's no other questions, I think what we'll do at this time is we're going to close public testimony on HB 214, and we're going to hold this bill over, and we're going to make some appropriate changes to it, and then we'll hear it one more time and try to move it out of committee. And with that, let me see here. Is there any more discussions on 214? President Seaton?
I just want to say, say that I really appreciate the flow chart. It's just, you know, these are difficult concepts to try and get down and read through these words and find out exactly how they work. And I just wanted to express that that was very helpful.
Representative Seaton, thank you for that. That was a battle. Okay, well, if there's no other comments for 214, we've managed to get through our committee work in a relatively in a good fashion, I guess I want to say. So I appreciate everyone's work on this. Like I said, we're going to hold this bill over. Our next meeting will be Tuesday, March 13th. We'll take up HB 314 and HB 250 and HRC 18 and HRC 19. So we have our work cut out for us on this coming Thursday. And with that, we will stand adjourned at, what time is it? 4:50. 3:50. 3:50.